This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
What I'm going to do this morning is summarize the mitzvah the way the Sefer HaChinuch does, and then move straight into the Gemara, and focus on the first key question, the first conceptual question that we're going to have to understand as we go through the mitzvah. As far as Sforim are concerned, it would be good if you could get a photostat of the Minchas Chinuch. So that would be of these. It's in the second volume of the new edition of the Minchas Chinuch. But the best would be probably just to photostat the whole mitzvah. It's actually two mitzvahs: the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem and the mitzvah of Chilul Hashem. So that you can follow that inside. We will be using the text inside the Minchas Chinuch, as well as the various Gemaras and Rambams that I'll refer to. The Gemara that we're going to be using in the first little while is going to be Sanhedrin, Daf Ayin Dalet Amud Aleph, until the end of the Perek. Daf Ayin Dalet is at the end of Perek Shmini of Sanhedrin. So we're going to be doing the Gemara from Daf Ayin Dalet Amud Beis until the end of the Perek. And we'll be doing the Rambam in a few different places. We'll be doing the Rambam possibly in the Sefer HaMitzvahs. And then the Sefer HaMitzvahs is divided into two sections, the mitzvahs lo ta'aseh and the mitzvahs aseh, the negative and the positive mitzvahs. In the negative mitzvah, it's mitzvah samach gimel, mitzvah 63. And in the positive mitzvahs, it's mitzvah number 6, number vav. That's in the Sefer HaMitzvahs of the Rambam, if you want to have that handy. And in the Rambam itself, we'll be doing it again in two areas it comes up. It comes in... The first area it will come is Yesodei HaTorah, which is in Sefer HaMadol, the first of the Rambam's books, Sefer Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah, Perek He, fifth Perek, the first part of the Perek. And we also have some of it in Hilchos Malochim. Let me try and get you the reference for that. That is Perik Yud Halacha Beis. We're going to be referring to as well in the first couple of weeks. The Rambam Perik Yud Halacha Beis, chapter 10, Halacha 2 of Hilchos Malachim, at the end of the Yad HaChazokah. Let's get into the definition of the mitzvah firstly this morning. The definition of the mitzvah results from a posuk in Vayikra, in Parshas Emor, Perik Chof Beis, where we're told to keep all the mitzvahs, and we have to do all the mitzvahs. And then it says, "V'lo tichallelu es shem kodshi," and you will not profane my name, you will not disgrace my name. "V'nikdashti b'soch b'nei Yisrael ani Hashem," I shall be sanctified among the b'nei Yisrael. That's the source of the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem. The Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvahs categorizes the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, or rather Chilul Hashem, into three different sections. And he gets those sections, at least two of them, from the piece of the Gemara that we're going to be learning. The first section is a general section that applies to everybody, and that is anybody who's instructed to do an avera, to transgress a mitzvah, during a time of shmad, that means there is a decree against Yiddishkeit, there's a decree against the practice of the Torah, and in that environment of decree, he's instructed to do anything wrong, any avera, or, alternatively, it's not time of shmad, but he's instructed to do one of the three, Hilei Arayish, Shvichas Domim, and Avodah Zarah. Either of those two situations, either shmad and any mitzvah, or a normal period and one of those three mitzvahs, who chayav sheyimser nafshoi v'yaharei v'al yavor, says the Rambam. His obligation is to give his life and be killed and not do the other. That's the first category of Chilul Hashem. Ve'im Ovar Velo Neherag. And if in front of people he does the Avera and isn't killed, saves his life by doing the Avera, Chilul Es Hashem Barabim, that's Chilul Hashem. Ve'cheto Atzumoid, and that's a very severe chet. It's interesting, the Rambam comments, that we establish that you're not, when you are forced to do Avodah Zorah, you're not over Avodah Zorah. So if somebody holds a gun at your head and says, serve idolatry, and you serve the idolatry, you haven't served idolatry. You're not Chayav Kores, you're not Chayav Malkus, you're not Chayav Misa, you're not Chayav for that. Because that's Be'ones. Anything that you do Be'ones, you're potter for. You're not considered. So it wasn't done willingly, it was done by force. You would never have done it if you had had any kind of freedom. But it's Chilul Hashem.
Comes out of the but of course, the sexual impropriety, you can't do it without, unless your heart's into it to some extent. So that you have done wrong.
Yes,
right?
Yes. Avodah Zorah and murder as well.
Right.
And Avodah Zorah is the only one which has this kind of anomaly. You've been over Chilul Hashem very seriously without having done the Averah. This is what actually happens. Without having been Chayav for the Averah. Very interesting. So that's the first section. The second section is to do any Avera, even not by force, just as a rebellion, as an act of rebellion against God. So you don't have a taiva for it, you're not doing it because you've got a Yetzirah and because it's delicious and you want to and you just haven't got the strength of character to withhold. It's as a blatant act of rebellion against the Torah, that too is an act of Chilul Hashem. And the third chelik is a very interesting one altogether, and that is any prominent person who does anything which might not even be an Avera, but isn't fit for who he is, and people see disgrace in that. So to act in a disgraceful, in a way that is disgraceful according to your stature, is a Chilul Hashem, even if it's not an Avera altogether. So that kind of opens it very, very wide as to what that's a subjective thing, and that's serious, and it's a completely different section. So those are the two areas, the three areas the Rambam says constitutes Chilul Hashem. And I would suggest that you go through the text. We will do it after we finish the sugya, because we'll use the Rambam as a summary. But it would be good in the meanwhile, once you've got the photostat of the mitzvah, that you go through mitzvah resh tzadihei, all the Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, whichever you prefer, where the Rambam breaks it down into these three sections very clearly and summarizes exactly what the mitzvah is. That's the mitzvah of Chilul Hashem. What is the source of the fact that when there is no shmad and you're not and it's not one of the three cardinal averas, so Chilul Shabbos, it's not shmad, but a non-Jew is forcing you to be Mechalel Shabbos, and you can only save your life by being Mechalel Shabbos. What's the din? It's not shmad. There's an individual non-Jew who decides to do it. There's no law against the practice of Judaism, but he doesn't want Shabbos being practiced. So what would that be? What would you have to do?
What's the source?
No, firstly, what's the din?
It's not shmad.
It's not shmad, and it's not one of the three cardinal averas.
It's not in public.
And it's, even if it is in public, it's not one of the three averas. Mm-hmm. So what would be the din?
Well, just do it because it's onus.
You've got to do it. You've actually got to do it. And if you don't do it, the Rambam says, "Mischayev benafsho," you're guilty of death by God.
What if it's in public? This is not a shmad, but somebody in public is saying break Shabbos.
Even then,
you break Shabbos.
You're not allowed to give your life. So let's look at the mitzvahs lo taseh. Mm-hmm. So looking at mitzvah Samach Gimel, the negative mitzvah is number 63 in the Sefer HaMitzvahs of the Rambam. Okay. not there. I think if I don't have it with me, it's probably in the Rambam, in the Hilchos Kesuvah HaTorah, where the Rambam says quite clearly that if you do give your life under those circumstances, mischayev benafshi, you're guilty of a capital offense in Hashem's eye as well. Because you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to give your life for one of the regular mitzvahs if it's not a time of Shemad. So what is the, why not? Why does life come before Torah? Before the mitzvahs, that's what we really say. Life comes before mitzvahs. The mitzvah is not to be kept at the. Why would that be?
Because you can do more mitzvahs if you stay alive.
So one would be a logical reason. If you stay alive, we can do more mitzvahs. Maybe that would be one reason.
That's doing shemad also.
Because
then you could argue that would be doing shemad as well.
It's an affirmative mitzvah to live.
And where do we have that from?
Choose life.
The chai bohem. These are the mitzvahs of Hashem, the chai bohem, and that a man must live by. That a man must live by. So the Torah is given to us to live by mitzvahs. We'll see in the Gemara. To live by mitzvahs, not to die by mitzvahs. Mitzvahs are meant, and we need to take that statement on two levels. The one is the pure halakhic level of mitzvahs are meant to be lived, not to bring death. But even more than that, mitzvahs are meant to be a source of vitality, not a source of the opposite. But there needs to be a vitality in a mitzvah. The chai bohem is more than just survival. The chai bohem is there's a chayus in the mitzvah. We need to live by our mitzvahs. There needs to be a vitality in our mitzvahs. Now what we're going to, the first thing that we're going to be looking at in the Minchas Chinuch, and to do that we're going to have to go through the Sugya and the Gemara, is this a rational thing, without being told in the Torah, would we know this? Or is it a Gzeres HaKosuv? Is the natural thing to say, God tells me to do A and a human being tells me to go against that, what am I going to do? What is the question? That rationally I might say, Divrei HaRav, Divrei HaTalmid, Divrei Mishonim. The Ribbono Shel Olam says keep Shabbos. The human being says don't. Even if the human being says I'll kill you if you do, what can I do? God told me. Why am I going to listen to a human being instead of God? So I need God to tell me the chai bohem. I'm giving you permission. I'm telling you that when your life is threatened, I don't want you to do it. But if God wouldn't have told us, maybe we would have to do it. Or is the chai bohem an affirmation of something we should know rationally? What will the difference be? The difference will be a goy. Does a goy have to give his life for the seven mitzvahs? He doesn't have the mitzvah of the chai bohem. So a goy only has the seven mitzvahs. Does he have to give his life to keep those seven mitzvahs? If we say it's just a rational thing, that clearly you don't give your life for a mitzvah, then the goy also doesn't give his life for a mitzvah. If we say it's exactly the opposite, no, normally you would think you do give your life for a mitzvah. Why would you listen to a human being instead of God? Then a goy would not have to give his life for a mitzvah because he doesn't have the mitzvah of the chai bohem. So that would be the halachic differentiation. And now we need to move into the Gemara, and we've got a daf of Gemara to learn.
Sanhedrin.
And Sanhedrin, I am Dalit.
I am
Dalit on the days. I'm a Dalit.
I'm a Dalit.
Right.
I'm all holiday.
Right in the beginning of the, right in the, that's the right page you're on, yeah. Right in the middle of the Amud. No. You'll see at the beginning of a line, there's a little gimel of the Rambam's thing. It's yeah. Right in the middle, Kol Avera Shabbat Torah. Have you got that? Mm-hmm. I think a little bit earlier, you need to go before that. Still further back. There, now look for the back, that's right. And then if you go halfway down the page, on the right hand margin, and out of the next page, and down the line, we got that Kol Avera Shabbat Torah. And if you start just on the line ahead of that, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shimon Ben Yehotzadak, have you got that? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shimon Ben Yehotzadak. Rabbi Yochanan said in the name of Rabbi Shimon Ben Yehotzadak. Nimnu Vegomru Ba'alias Beis Nitozo, Belud. The Chachomim took a vote, they had a debate, they had a serious conversation, they took a vote on it, the Gomru, they made a decision. And this took place in the Aliyah of the house of Nitaza in Lud. So this was obviously a momentous occasion, a very serious discussion with a very serious outcome, but the Gemara wants to record that it took place and exactly where it took place. It's interesting that it doesn't give us the date. In today, if this was a modern document, the date would be the first thing it would say, on such and such a day, or such and such a month, that's when this happened. Why do you think the Gemara is... We have the source, Rabbi Shimon ben Yotzadak, being reported to us by Rabbi Yochanan. All the Chachamim of the time got together, and they made a decision exactly where it was, not a mention of when it was.
Great question.
And then the Gemara never does. The Gemara never gives a date. On such and such a day it was Paskind. Abai and Rava had an argument on such and such. Never. We don't have any date. We just know it all took place by the people. We can work out what period it was. But we're not given a date when this happened. Why is time not one of the elements? Because it's irrelevant, isn't it?
When Torah is important.
It isn't important. To say why is, yeah, it isn't important.
Obviously it's timeless, but then why the place? It's everywhere for all Jews, everywhere also, so what?
The place, possibly, to give it the place. We're not often given the place. This is unusual that we're given the place. Uh-huh. But we're given the place maybe to create the picture of it, to show how that the Chachamim came together in this attic of Avnei Tazah in the town of Lod. It gives reality to it. You can actually picture the people. It doesn't matter when it was. But to have the picture in your mind, time is not important for you to envision an event. When you're envisioning an event, there doesn't have to be a clock on the wall. Isn't that so? When you envision something, when you dream often, can you allocate a time to the dream? Exactly when it took place? Although time is considered one of the dimensions of reality, when you're envisioning it, it's in a sense the least relevant, other than when you're trying to order something or structure something. But we're dealing, when the Chachomim created a halacha, it's not for a particular time. And it's not even the creation of a halacha from that time onwards. They're revealing a halacha which existed beforehand and will continue afterwards. So they're operating, the Torah operates above the dimension of time altogether, and it's unusual that place is even mentioned here. What did they decide in Beit Nitzah? Kol averos shevat Torah, all the averos in the Torah. Im omrim la'odom avor v'al teharei. If they say to a person, commit the avera and you will not be killed. Ya'avor ba'al yahare. The person should do the avera and rather choose not to be killed. Chutz me'avodas pecholim v'gilui arayos u'shvichus dam. With the exception of the three averas of idol worship, sexual immorality, and murder. Those not. Those you rather die than commit the avera. That's what they decided in... On that occasion, in the Aliyas Beis Nitzoza in Lud, asks the Gemara, "Va'avodas kechovim loy? Is avodas kechovim one of the exclusions that you have to rather commit the idolatry than be over the avera?" V'hotanya, did we not learn? It's interesting. We noticed when we were summarizing the Rambam that avodas zorah is a bit of an exception. Because you'll end up not actually having committed Avodah Zorah. If you commit Avodah Zorah by Oynes, it's not Avodah Zorah. So that it has this kind of paradoxical relationship with the mitzvah of Chilul Hashem. Avodah Kechovim Loi, Vahotanya, Omer Rabbi Yishmoel. Did we not learn that Rabbi Yishmoel said, Minayin Sheim Omru Loi Lo'odah? Where from do we know that if they say to a person, Avod Avodah Kechovim, Va'al Teharei, you should serve idolatry and then you will not be killed. Where do you know from that you have to be killed and not serve idolatry? Talmud loymar v'chai bohem. The answer is, it says v'chai bohem. That's where we know from. V'lo sheyomus bohem. Which implies that you're not allowed to die by it. So Rabbi Yishmoel invokes the posuk of v'chai bohem for avodah zorah. The other mitzvahs, either he doesn't believe you need a posuk for, or kol shekhen, certainly the other mitzvahs. But he uses b'chai bohem even for avodah zorah. Now the question will come in that case, use b'chai bohem also for murder and immorality. If you're going to use b'chai bohem to say that you've got to be over rather than, that you've got to live, you've got to be over rather than die, even for avodah zorah, what about the other two? And that's what the Braisa asks. Yochol afilu b'farhes. Yeah, first the verse is, what about Befarhes, yeah? Does that mean that even if in public you have to serve idolatry, that you do that? Talmud Lomar, no. V'leit chalul Hashem kodshi v'nikdashti b'tzav b'nei Yisrael. So that's the advice of Rabbi Yishmael. What does Rabbi Yishmael say? Avodah Zorah, you've got to give your life for, because it says b'chai b'lehem is the universal principle. Does it also apply to murder and immorality? We don't know yet. We'll have a look at that still, as far as Rabbi Yishmael is concerned. But certainly as far as Avodah Zorah is concerned, Rabbi Yishmael holds you rather commit Avodah Zorah than die. What about the Fahesia? No, there it says V'lo Techalul Hashem Kodshi. So the Pasuk in Emor, it says V'lo Techalul Hashem Kodshi B'toch B'nei Yisrael, that you shall not defile Hashem, my name, in the midst of B'nei Yisrael. That's talking about public. But in private, if you privately have to take on another religion, says Rabbi Yishmael, you do it. But then how could the Chachomim in Beis Nitoza in Lud have decided that for all three you don't give your life, you give your life not only for Gilui Arayos and Shrichus Donim, but also for Avodah Zorah? What do they do with the posuk of V'chai Bohem? Answers the Gemara. Inhu de'omur k'Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Shmuel, there's not the only opinion on this matter. They hold like Rabbi Elazar in this matter. To Tanya, because we learned in the Brisa, Rabbi Elazar, and Rabbi Elazar says, "Ve'ahavtu es Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha b'chol nafshecha b'chol moedecha." It says that you shall love Hashem your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your belongings. Im ne'ma b'chol nafshecha lama ne'ma b'chol moedecha, v'im ne'ma b'chol moedecha lama ne'ma b'chol nafshecha. If you're told that you have to love God with all your life, why do you have to be told with your money too? If you're told that you've got to love God with all your money and with all your might, why do you have to be told with all your life? Doesn't b'chol moedecha mean with everything you've got? And doesn't b'chol nafshecha mean with your life? And so certainly anything less than that. Surely one of those words is completely inclusive and you don't need anything else to be told anything else. That's the Gemara. There can be a person whose life is more valuable than his money. That says not only your belongings but also your life. There are some people who would rather die than lose their money, and those people not only with all your life but also with all your money. Be that as it may, what does it say? You've got to love God with all your life. That means you've got to be willing not only to give all your money but to give your life for the love of God too. Where does that act out? In Avodah Zorah. That means that if in order to stay faithful to God you've got to give your life, then so be it. So that's Rabbi Elazar's source. This overrides B'chai Bohem. So yes, you're right, Rabbi Yishmael, there is a law of B'chai Bohem, that generally speaking, mitzvahs are given to live by and not to die by. But the Ahavtos Hashem Elokecha teaches us that when it comes to Avodah Zorah, you've got to die. Not only in public, which we know from the Lord Techalul Hashem Kodshi, and even you, Rabbi Yishmael, agree with that, but also in private, which we know from the Ahavtos Hashem Elokecha. So that's how the Chachomim in Beis Nitoza, there's a machlokes Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Elazar, and the Chachomim in Beis Nitoza debated and paskened like Rabbi Elazar in this matter. Fine. Ask the Gemara. So now we know from that there's a general overriding principle of the Chai Bohem. We understand that. We know that there's an exclusion of Avodah Zorah but Parhesia, public Avodah Zorah, from the Loite Chalul Hashem Kodshi B'toch B'nei Yisrael. And we know that according to Rabbi Elazar, there is an exclusion of Avodah Zorah, even Betzina, even in private, from the Ahavtos Hashem Elokecha. Gilui Arayos Shlichus Domim, where do we get Gilui Arayos and Shlichus Domim from? How do we know that even for Gilui Arayos and Shlichus Domim, you've got to give your life rather than commit the Avera? Kide Rabbi, that we learn from Rabbi. The Tanya, for we learn. Rabbi Omer, Ki kaasher yokum ish al re'ehu urtzochoy nefesh, kein hadavar hazeh. Says in the Torah, when it's talking about a man who rapes or seduces a woman in the town, we assume that it wasn't rape. We assume it was seduction because nobody heard her scream. If it's out in the field, we assume it's rape because even if she screamed, nobody would hear. And therefore, she's not responsible. He gets the death sentence when she's a Naro Hamu Rosso, she's betrothed, So it's not a pinuyah, she's not an unmarried woman, she's betrothed. He gets the death sentence, she does not. Why? Because the Torah says she's a victim. This is like a man gets up and murders her in the field. Is she responsible for being murdered? So that's the one case where in the Torah we see, despite many other dissimilarities between rape and murder, there's one case there in the Torah where there is some kind of equation. And the Torah says, this is like a man who murders her. He uses his strength, he's violent, and she couldn't stand up to him. And what is it that we learn from the case of murder? Why does the Torah equate the case of rape out in the field to murder? We use murder to teach us something about rape, but we also learn something from rape. The Torah creates an equation between Rotzeach and Naira Amurasa, murder and the rape of a Naira Amurasa. What is the equation? My Naira Amurasa nitan lahatzili b'nafshoi. Just as in the case of a Naira Amurasa, if a third person is watching and sees this man pursuing this girl, and the only way he can save the girl and save the man from the Avera is by killing the man, then he's permitted to kill the man. And he has to do that. The same applies with Rotzeach. You see somebody going after somebody else to murder them, and the only way you can stop the event is by killing the pursuer. You have to kill the pursuer. So that's the one thing we learn from. So we learn the case of Rotzeach from the case of Naira Amurasa, but it also works on the inverse. Umakish Naira Amurasa leRotzeach, and it also connects Naira Amurasa to Rotzeach. In the same way as a rotzeach has to rather be killed than kill, even for the case of having a sexual relationship with a married woman, he should rather be killed than commit the aver. That's what we learn from there. So now we know that you've got to give your life for Avodah Zorah, even Betzino. We know that from Ve'ahavtos Hashem Elokecha. We know that you've got to give your life for Naira Amurasa, for a case of adultery. And we know that from Rotzeach, from murder. After the Gemara Rotzeach, Gufei Minalon. So where do we know that for murder you've got to give your life? That you're not allowed to kill somebody to save your life? Answer the Gemara Svarah. That's a Svarah. That's plain logic. Dahaud ata lekamei de rabba. There was a person who came before Rabba, or Rava in some version. The Omaleini said to him, Omarli mare duroi, the head of my city, the mayor of my city, instructed me, Zil katle leplanye vi iloi katlin olach. Go and execute that Jewish person, or I'll execute you. That's what he was told. Comes with a shayla to Rava, what do I do?
That's the question.
Omale lekatlucho v'loy tikto. You have to be killed and do not kill. Why? So he doesn't quote a verse. He doesn't quote a source. He reasons. Mi yema de dama didoch sumak tfei. Dilmo dama de ho gavra sumak tfei. Who says your blood is redder? Who says your blood is more precious before God? Maybe his is. Now we need to do the Rashi on that. We start with the Rashi of Svarahu, which is, got it?
Yeah.
About a quarter of the way up from the page, on the page of Rashi, Savorahu. You want it there, Savorahu?
It's toward the bottom. It's a quarter of the way up from the bottom. Middle of the column. Take the spear and go up about six lines.
Svarahu? shelo tidachen nefesh chaveru. It's logical that you should not push aside your friend's life. De'ika tarti, because if you do that, there are two problems. Ibud neshoma, somebody's died. Ve'averon, somebody's murdered. In front of yourself, rather than give your own life, delekel elochada ibud neshoma, v'hu lo yavro. And in which case, there's only the loss of a life and no case of murder. So it's simple logic. If I kill that person, then we've lost a Jew, and somebody's committed murder. If I let myself be killed, we've lost a Jew, and nobody's committed murder. So clearly, the look how. Absolutely clinically, we have to look at such an emotive situation. Just imagine being in a case, and this was a case that came before Rav, it's real. Somebody comes along and says, I want you to execute this person. So it's a shame. We've got to actually just analyze it with clinical logic. It's two against one.
It's not a moral, well, it is moral in a way, but it's not like.
Well, now it becomes moral only in that your defense might be that I'm such a great person. He's a piece of rubbish. He's a nothing. Why would I, the Chofetz Chaim, let's say it is?
Well, that's a kasha.
Wouldn't that be difficult? Imagine, God forbid, this is a Godel be Yisrael, and the person, the Jew he has to kill, is a nobody, a drunk, but a Jew, a homeless drunk on the street, and the mayor comes along and says, "Here's a gun, shoot that dog." Well, I kill you. And now you're going to say, "Klaisol, he might be on the verge of a Nobel Prize for discovering a cure for cancer." And he's going to decide now, do I go or does this person go? So he's got to go through this clinical thing. That's where the moral issue comes in, where you can't play God. That's where he says, who says, how can you judge who's the greater? Which is an amazing lesson in judging people. We've got to be judging actions all the time. You judge actions, what's right, what's a good action, what's a bad action. But you can never judge a person. You just don't know enough about what goes on in the person to be able to make that judgment. Because why does God say you've got to be over the mitzvah? Because of the chai bohem. Because Hashem values a Jewish neshama. And here in the case of the murderer, even the source of ike ibud neshama, one neshama is going to go. Why should that allow murder? It does away with the mitzvah of the chai bohem. There's reason. Chai bohem means I value a life. I don't want to lose a life, God says. Life is more important to me than the mitzvah. Okay. But here a life is going to be lost.
Then kill that Jew, or I'm going to kill you and 10 other Jews.
That would be different, probably. That would be different. Mi yodea, here you've got the important thing in Rashi. Mi yodea shenafshoi chavivo leyotzro yoser minefesh chaveyo. Even if you're the Chofetz Chaim, how do you really know that your soul is more precious to God than that person's? You don't know what he might have done. You don't know where he comes from. You don't know. How can you make that decision? That's playing God. If somebody has to die in any case to decide who dies, that's playing God. And you that's
you don't know what he's going to do either.
And you don't know what he's going to do. And that's our whole question with limited resources, and the question of taking people off life support machines, and two people are on, can you take the one off, the older person off the machine to save the younger person? Because life is infinite, even in a moment of life, you don't know what we have no means of measuring or valuing. So yes, you might have to make a decision when you've got a life support machine as to who gets it out of 2 or 10 people. That's a hard enough decision. But to take somebody off to give it to somebody else, that would be absolute murder that we're not allowed to do.
Rabbi, in this scenario, what if the person refuses to kill the third person and he gets killed himself? Now the mayor goes to the second person. You go kill that guy or not, I'll kill you. So the second person is executed. He goes to the third person. Besides that, the end result, if that third person is supposed to be killed, he's going to get killed anyway. And this guy who refused to kill, he will get killed also. We lose two lives.
So that's the question. Where we know for sure that guy is going to get killed. He's going to be executed. If a Jew won't do it, who knows how many Jews will die in the process. And in the end, he's going to die too. The Rambam talks about that, and we can have a look at that as we get on. When you start playing, when numbers start coming into it. But at the moment, we're looking at one against one, with the added fact of murder. So The chayav bohem doesn't apply because somebody is dying in any case. Why commit a murder as well? If somebody has to die, then somebody, so I might say, because I consider my soul more valuable than his soul, who are you to say that? That we can never say that. And therefore the word of Hashem cannot be pushed aside in this case. Hashem says, you shall not murder. You're not allowed to murder. That's the end of that Rashi. Then the next Rashi, Mari Duroi, Adon Iri, the master of my city, Venochri Hava, he was a non-Jew. My chazis the dama didach sumach tve, what do you think that your blood is more red? So Rashi explains, Mi yodea, sheyehe damcho choviv venoel yitzrucho. Who can say that your blood is more precious and pleasant to your creator? Yoser midam chavercho, more so than your friend's blood. Therefore the principle of the chay bohem does not apply here. The chay bohem is allowed only because of the value of a Jewish soul to God. And now where there is the loss of soul, the word of the king cannot be set aside, because he's commanded on the mitzvah of Ritzicho, and there's no reason to commit the Avera of Ritzicho. There's no reason to murder. The Chay Bohem doesn't apply here. Somebody is dying in any case. God says don't murder. You can't murder. That's the end of the story. So the source is Ritzicho. Ritzicho comes from logic. Another really interesting thing here is, look at the power of logic. That we've just paskened a halocha, which is a capital halocha, a law of life and death, using nothing but logic. It's not quoting from a pasuk. It's not quoting from the Shulchan Aruch or the Rambam. Rava reasons this out using logic, which shows that in Torah, our problem, of course, is just to know how to use logic and to be sure that our logic is accurate and that our logic is never distorted by ego. But when logic is pure, look at its power. We should never think that logic isn't one of the factors used in the interpretation and halachic process of the Torah. It absolutely is. And this now becomes the basis for Nairo Amorosa as well, because of the Hekesh. So the Torah connects the case of Nairo Amorosa to the case of murder. Murder, we reason out rationally. You're not allowed to kill the person. You're not allowed to kill somebody else to save your life, because there's no v'chai bohem, and who says your blood is better than his? That's logic. Now that I know I'm not allowed to save my life by killing somebody, what is the deal with Nairo Amorosa? The same because of the Hekesh. The Torah has connected the two. Just as in murder I have to give my life rather than kill, so in the case of Nairo Amorosa I would have to give my life rather than commit that adultery. And Avodah Zorah we know from the Ahavtos Hashem Elokecha. Those are where we learn the three primary Avodahs from. What do you think if we try and look at a slightly deeper meaning to the Hekesh, why we've got all the mitzvahs in the Torah of the Chay Bohem. Principle is you live by them. We've got murder where there's a logical process by which we reason that the Chay Bohem doesn't apply. Does that same logical process apply to the Nairo Amorosa, to adultery? In other words, without this Hekesh, what I'm asking is, what exactly does this Hekesh do? Without the Hekesh, what have we got? Without the Hekesh, we've got the Ahavtos Hashem Elokecha, and we've got the Lo Tichalu Hashem Kodshi. So we know that Avodah Zorah, you can't save your life by committing idolatry. Murder, we know we have a logical reason why you can't murder to save your life. What about immorality? What would we say without Sukkim? Does it fit under the Chay Bohem category, or does it fit under the murder and Avodah Zorah category?
Well, I don't know, but the one thing I would start tugging on is why the status of Arusa. Why not a single woman? Why not a married woman? Like, what are they?
A married woman it would certainly apply to as well. Not only an Arusa, but not to an unmarried woman. An unmarried woman, there's a kind of a takona. You can marry her. You can do things and. The
ways out.
But leaving, looking at it again, we have psukim that tell us that you can't save your life by committing idolatry. We have logic that has taught us you can't murder. You can't save your life by murdering. So those we know. Everything else you can save your life to do.
So what brings immorality into it?
What brings?
Yeah, what brings immorality into this category?
Right, so where would immorality fit?
Is there a deathly component to the mamzer results of having an affair with a married woman?
Before we even go there, just thinking mathematically first, if the Torah needs to give us a hekesh, then that tells us that without the hekesh, we would have put Nara Murosa together with the Chaybohe. Isn't that right? We don't have a clear possible. And the logic of murder doesn't apply. That whole thing of who says your blood is redder than this blood doesn't apply. Nobody's dying. You're not losing a soul. So logically, I would have kept Nara Murosa out of it. And I would have said there are only two cardinal sins for which you have to give your life, avodah zarah and murder. The Torah comes and says, Ki kasher yokum ish al re'ehu urutzachoy nefesh. This is like murder. The Torah actually says it. Says that. The case of rape in the field is like murder.
Is there a logic here then? The strongest urge, and since avodah zarah is gone, the strongest urge that a man has, that he needs to control, is the sexual urge. The whole point of Torah, the whole point of our lives with Torah, is to correct our characters and our urges. And so you're contradicting your entire Torah life when you indulge in something. Could that be then like the murder?
But firstly, where would we know that from? And secondly, that would then apply to eating tray. That could apply to going to business on Shabbos or watching television on Shabbos. You've got a Yetzirah for it, you've got a tiger for it. If the control of the tiger would be it.
That's two-bit tigers though. We're talking real tiger here. That's what I'm saying. This is the key tiger. And so is that now bring us to a critical decision more than the more reversible?
Well, I think you're touching on something really important. Let's take Avodah Zarah out of it, because there's no link between these two and Avodah Zarah. The link is between the two. Okay? Again, we have three altogether: Avodah Zarah, Tzichel, and Nara Murosa. Avodah Zarah is learned from V'Avdas Hashem Elokecha. So let's take that out of the picture. Nara Murosa is learned from Tzichel. So what we need to explore is the relationship between Nara Murosa and Tzichel. Is there a relationship? Is there a connection? The Torah creates a Hekesh, which tells us there is a halachic connection, which we might not otherwise have known. And that is, just as you cannot save your life by murder, you cannot save your life with immorality. We learn that from the posuk of Kasher Tzokhoi Nefesh. What I'm exploring is this posuk just a Gzeres HaKosu? The Torah just tells you this is what it is. You wouldn't have thought so, but it is. Or are we learning something deeper, that there is an ideological, a conceptual connection between the two? That in a sense we project the logic of murder onto the case of the Nara Murosa as well. And then what would the Torah be telling us? The Torah would be telling us that in the case of raping a married woman or Nara Murosa, there is an element of murder, is what we would have to say. That you are actually killing something of the soul of that woman. Because that's the kasher itself. Why would the Torah use those words? It's as if she was murdered. Just say she's free, she's potter. Why do you have to give the reason? Just say a man comes, he gets the death sentence, she's potter because it was an onus. That's all you have to say. Why does the Torah invoke the whole imagery of murder in the rape case?
You're only killing her if she was willing.
She's mad. You're only killing her if she's not willing.
You're killing her. No, but she's not killed if she wasn't willing. So how do you kill herself?
I'm suggesting that in the case of a rape, you are killing something. You're killing something emotional. You're killing something. So you're killing something of the core of what she is as a woman by doing that. So that this is an expanded case of murder. This is not just a question of a sexual crime. There is a murder crime in it as well. Now, what is important, the Vilna Gaon at the beginning of the book of Mishlei talks about all the averas get divided into two motivating, into two drives that bring one to do wrong. The one is kasoni and the one is ta'avoni. I mean, we learned from the Mishlei Shir at the Pidesion. We used to do that on Sunday mornings or Friday mornings. We actually did that piece of Vilna Gaon, where the Vilna Gaon talks about kasoni, averas, transgression, sending into personal ones driven by aggression, and taiva driven by, the taivoni driven by desire and passion. There are sins of aggression and sins of passion. The cardinal sin of aggression is ritzicha. The cardinal sin of passion, this is what you're saying, David, which is right, the cardinal sin of passion is adultery. So those two come together in this case, where we learn the one from the other. In neither case are you permitted to save your life by giving them. And what I'm suggesting is that we're being told here that the reason is because there's something murderous in the rape of a married woman. That you're actually defiling her in a way which attacks her at her core and deprives her of something permanent that can never be repaid. Because the essence of ritzipa is you can never give a life back. Theft and all the rest of it, you can restitute a person. But with rape and murder, you can't. You've taken away something that can never be given back. And therefore the Torah equates the two, and we're not allowed to do that.
We're saying you're taking more from a woman if you force her and she's married than you take from a virgin.
Seduction.
Either way, but you're taking more from her when she's...
Because you haven't broken a relationship with her betrothed. Mm-hmm. You haven't broken that relationship, is core to who she is. Then the Torah says, what is the outcome of seduction? You have to marry her. You become a husband. It's just the natural progression of what you started.
Mm-hmm.
So you haven't taken anything away from her. That doesn't make it right and good. It's a terrible thing to do, obviously. But it's on nowhere near the same level as the rape of a married woman, where you've actually taken aside her capacity to relate to her husband in the way that she could before. And that's something that cannot be given back, Harry. Do you want one else?
You know, I'm just thinking about in Jewish history, I mean, rape has been something so common. I'm talking about Gentiles, pogroms, and over the years, and who knows how many cases of rape there were, probably in the tens of thousands now, who knows how many. And there's always been provision made, you know, for the outcome, you know, if there's a baby, you know, provisions and accepting and treating this woman with mitat rachamim. So how does it come in here that you kill someone in a married woman when she's being raped?
We're going to see on the next Amud, and we just do some of the Tosfos, if we go into it in some depth, which we probably should, that the rape by a non-Jew is very different and not nearly as serious. Not nearly as serious for the woman, and we will see why that is. That doesn't mean that it's not legally serious and all of that, but a Jewish rape is much more severe.
What about the Jew raping a non-Jewish married woman?
Also serious, also.
I think so.
Also can be this one, yeah. Also serious.
Okay. In the case that a person is ordered to kill the third person, and the rabbis say he's not supposed to kill because that's what Torah says. Also, we know that there's a law of Rodef. The third person couldn't be. Why didn't the rabbi consider the third person being a Rodef to the second?
So, well, if you can kill the third person, that would be okay. He is a Rodef, you're right.
No, the second person is ordered by the mayor to kill the third person.
Right.
If he doesn't kill, he's going to get killed himself.
You mean, why isn't the third person a Rodef?
Right, the third person would
be... He's done nothing wrong. What
he's going to be causing the second person to be...
But he's done nothing wrong.
But
your question would be a question if he's committed a crime.
Isn't he causing the second person to be killed by not killing him, the third person?
But innocently, the Rodef is only a person who's made a choice. And you're right, we use the principle, for example, when with a pregnant woman and so on, when we say that the fetus is threatening the life of the... But that's only until the baby is actually born. Once the baby is born, we use man, you know, who says your blood is better than her blood. So then we don't play God again. You know. Okay, so we'll stay on the Gemara. I think it might even take us a few weeks to finish the sugya. It's a full daf of Gemara. There's some Tosfos. So all of that in dealing with that question of, is the Chai Bohem a Gzeres HaKosov, is the natural thing to say we do give our lives for any other, and the Torah comes and says no, the Chai Bohem, we don't do so, or is the Chai Bohem stating something that we should know rationally, but of course the natural thing is not to give your life for a mitzvah.
Well, we need copies of the Mikvah Sinat and the Rambam for next week.
No, not for next week.
Okay. Thank you.
Welcome back. Thanks.